I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Having that discussion, where does life begin? And by putting, you know, staking the tent post is at life beginning at conception, we're trying to change the narrative there.
Learn more about a few of the pro-life proposals making their way through the new Congress.
I agree with President Trump that every abortion is a tragedy.
A closer look at the confirmation process for HHS nominee Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his back and forth with pro-abortion lawmakers.
Again, the science is kind of telling us that marriage matters, and in some ways matters more than ever, even as it's lost ground in recent decades.
A couple of solutions amid declining birth rates in much of the world. We examine ways to boost marriage and parenthood.
Some people like to confuse the topic. They'll try to define life at a particular stage. And so, for example, they'll say it begins at a heartbeat, or it begins at the moment that the child takes air. I'm not sure. I think scientifically, I'd rather rest on the fact that you've created a unique individual that will never be created ever again. Has unique, you know, entirely unique DNA, has a, you know, blood type, has a gender from the moment of conception.
That was Congressman Eric Burleson on why he introduced the Life at Conception Act. The Republican from Missouri bases his measure on the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which recognized formerly enslaved people as equal citizens. The proposal says unborn children are persons under the 14th Amendment. The measure has 68 co-sponsors. A date for voting on the measure has not yet been set. Burleson says work began in the previous Congress.
It has been introduced in the past by Alex Mooney. He was a congressman from West Virginia who ran for U.S. Senate, and I was a co-sponsor of the bill at that time. So with him not coming back, I reached out to him and asked who was going to be taking up this subject, and was able to sponsor it after he left.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are considering another pro-life measure. This one would federally block the use of chemical abortion pills in the United States. Representative Andy Ogles, a Republican from Tennessee, introduced the Ending Chemical Abortions Act of 2025. He originally submitted the proposal back in 2023. The bill would block the use of chemical abortions in the U.S. This is important because mifepristone is used in more than 60% of abortions. Co-sponsors include Mary Miller of Illinois, Paul Gosar of Arizona, and Ben Klein of Virginia. New York's Democrat governor signs a measure to shield the identities of doctors who prescribe abortion medications. The move comes just days after a physician in New York is facing criminal charges, allegedly for prescribing abortion pills to a pregnant minor in Louisiana. Governor Kathy Hochul's measure allows doctors to request that their names be left off abortion pill bottles. Instead, their healthcare practice would be listed. Hochul also says she will not sign an extradition request to send the doctor to Louisiana. The state of California has agreed to a plea deal with pro-life activist David DeLayden, who exposed alleged illegal business deals by Planned Parenthood. DeLayden released undercover videos appearing to implicate Planned Parenthood, officials, and the National Abortion Federation in the illegal sale of unborn baby body parts. DeLayden and another journalist, Sandra Merritt, pleaded no contest to one charge of unlawful recording in exchange for the dropping of several felony charges. In a statement, DeLayden said, after enduring 9 years of weaponized political prosecution, putting an end to the lawfare launched by Kamala Harris is a huge victory for my investigative reporting and for the public's right to know the truth about Planned Parenthood's sale of aborted baby body parts. Pro-lifers in Delaware are fighting back against a proposal to legalize so-called medical aid in dying or assisted suicide. House Bill 140 was narrowly passed by Delaware's legislature in 2024, but vetoed by then-Governor John Carney. However, newly appointed Governor Matt Maher voiced his support for the bill. With the shift in the governor's office, the assisted suicide measure has its best chance of becoming law. The Diocese of Wilmington posted an action alert against the bill, saying in part, "Our opposition is rooted in the church's belief that the sanctity of life and the dignity of the individual, both of which are objective and non-negotiable truths and principles of our faith. If the legislation passes, it would fundamentally change Delaware's legal approach to medical ethics, medical practice, and healthcare decision-making." Lawmakers on Capitol Hill advance Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. At his first confirmation hearing, he was pressed by both sides of the aisle about his views on abortion.
I agree with President Trump that every abortion is a tragedy. I agree with him that we cannot be a moral nation if we have 1.2 million abortions a year. I agree with him that the states should control abortion. President Trump has told me that he wants to end late-term abortions, and he wants to protect conscience exemptions, and that he wants to end federal funding for abortions here or abroad. That's Title 10. I'm going to I serve at the pleasure of the president. I'm going to implement his policies.
RFK Jr. also faced questions related to Title 10, conscience objections, and state pro-life laws.
A pregnant woman with a life-threatening bleeding from an incomplete miscarriage goes to the ER, and her doctor also determines that she needs an emergency abortion. But she's in a state where abortion is banned. You would agree also, as an attorney, that federal law protects her right to that emergency care, correct?
I don't know. I mean, the answer to that is I don't know.
Dr. Ingrid Skop of the Charlotte Lozier Institute says that during the hearing, there were many lies from lawmakers. She's written an article for our sister news publication, the National Catholic Register, diving into the dangerous pro-abortion line of questioning made during the hearing. And Dr. Skop joins us now. Dr. Ingrid Skop, thank you for joining me. Can you share your thoughts on what Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada implied about pro-life laws?
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to tell the truth. This is intentional, deceptive fear-mongering. And the intent is to turn the American public against pro-life laws. Every single state's pro-life laws allows a doctor to use his medical judgment to determine what to do in a pregnancy emergency, even if it's an abortion. No state requires it to be an immediate risk, and no state requires everyone to agree. But if that doctor believes it needs to be done, he is empowered by the state to do it. And of course, it's common sense that a law that protects unborn life is not going to prohibit a doctor from giving care to a woman when that life has tragically ended in a miscarriage.
RFK Jr. said that he and President Trump want to end late-term abortions, which many lawmakers have denied even exist. What is the reality?
The CDC tells us there are about 10,000 abortions in the second half of pregnancy every year. Likely there's more because some states like California and Maryland refuse to give any data to the CDC. These are children that can live if delivered and given appropriate medical care. These are children who can feel pain when they are dismembered in these abortions. And if the doctor does not kill the child first and does an induction abortion, very likely these are children who are born alive and left to die by infanticide. Most people think these are probably children with very challenging fetal diagnoses or mothers whose life is at risk. But research from the abortion industry tells us the reasons are the same as early abortions, primarily social and financial. And women I've spoken to in Texas tell me also coercion. 9 months is a long time for a woman to say no to a man who wants her to abort her child that she wants to continue to carry.
That's such an important point about just people being worn down. Now, Democrat Senator Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire brought up the abortion pill mifepristone. Let's take a listen.
You said just now the discussion about mifepristone. Oh, he's asked me to study the safety of it. Here are the safety studies that tell us mifepristone is safe and effective. And I asked, Mr. Chair, that these about 40 studies be admitted to the record by unanimous consent.
Without objection.
So the studies are there. The safety is proved.
Dr. Skop, is mifepristone safe?
No, of course, it's never safe for the child. And in many cases, it harms the mother. Those studies that she's showing undoubtedly are from the abortion industry. They tell us the abortions they've sold and the complications they know about. But in many cases, between 15 and 50% of the women are lost to follow-up. They don't know the complications. And I should point out the FDA does not require mandatory reporting of a complication data. Since 2016, they've told doctors they only want to know about it if it kills a woman. When we look at better studies, we see that about 3 to 5% of women who take these drugs will require surgery for a complication. There are 4 times as many complications from these abortion drugs compared to surgical abortions. And I'm in Texas. I'm caring for women still that are being harmed because the FDA removed the in-person supervision, which allows abortionists like that New York abortionist to mail them in the mail to women in pro-life states. And there's no one to care for that woman when she has a totally medically unsupervised abortion and has a complication. She comes to my ER. I'm privileged to care for her, but I'm tired of them hurting the women in Texas and other pro-life states with this very laissez-faire approach to supervising these drugs.
And Dr. Skop, is there anything else you think our viewers should know?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that almost all abortions in our country are performed for social and financial reasons. These are women in crisis, often abandoned by the man who made them pregnant. We can help women in so many better ways by supporting pregnancy centers, maternity homes, coming alongside them, giving them the support they need, because surveys tell us that 60% of women with a history of abortion said they would have preferred to give birth if they'd only had more support.
Dr. Skop, thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for being with us today.
It's a privilege. Thank you for having me.
President Donald Trump is cracking down on USAID and what he says is the group's mismanagement of tax dollars. Pro-life lawmakers say that under President Biden, USAID sent more than $100 million to groups that push abortion in Africa. Another organization that seeks to weaken or eliminate pro-life laws around the world reportedly received $5 million from USAID. In Chile, President Gabriel Boric is seeking to legalize abortion and euthanasia nationwide in 2025 after failing to do so last year. For now, 3 circumstances of abortion are decriminalized: when the mother's life is at risk, the baby is non-viable, and in cases of rape or incest. According to the Guttmacher Institute, between 2015 and 2019, 170,000 pregnancies in Chile ended in abortion. In January, newly appointed Chilean Cardinal Fernando Chomali made headlines for considering it a gift that a pro-abortion law in Chile would be postponed. Cardinal Chomali recently sat down with ASI Prensa, EWTN's sister news agency that provides coverage for Spanish-speaking countries in Latin America. His Eminence discussed the realities of abortion and what the Catholic Church in Chile will do to protect life.
Nosotros creemos que el aborto, la eutanasia, no es una solución auténticamente humana porque implica la deliberada eliminación de un ser humano inocente.
We believe that abortion, euthanasia, is not an authentically humane solution because it implies the deliberate elimination of an innocent human being, and therefore we are going to continue promoting those laws that protect life. We will continue to promote the possibility of there being a strong structure that adequately cares for the mother and the child, etc. Behind a law of this type, there are some statements that are false. Firstly, that from certain weeks we would be in the presence of a human being, and that is false. From the moment of fertilization, a human life begins, and that is not what I say. That is what the embryology books, where all the medicine and biology students in the world study. and that is also what common sense says.
Cardinal Chomali also addressed the secular mindset of human dignity and gave his thoughts on what abortion and euthanasia do to a society.
An idea that is very false is that someone can decide what life is worth living, and that is impossible to decide. I know people who have serious physical problems, and without a doubt, they would choose life 100 times over. I think abortion and euthanasia is a failure of society, because it resolves complex situations, which I recognize, through an act of violence.
Back here in the United States, a pro-life bill has been introduced in the state of California. State Assemblywoman Leticia Castillo has introduced a bill promoting adoption as a viable option for teens with unplanned pregnancies. Other provisions of the bill include providing information on the emotional, legal, and financial aspects of adoption, offering resources for teens to connect with adoption agencies and counseling services, and ensuring that adoption is thoroughly discussed in public school health education curricula. On Friday, February 7th, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops observes National Marriage Week, an effort to promote marriage, family, and a culture of life. The USCCB offers free resources to help celebrate the sacrament and gift of marriage. They include preaching aids for priests and daily reflections for couples to meditate on during the week. Brad Wilcox, a professor of sociology and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia, joins the show to discuss the benefits of marriage and having children. He is also the author of Get Married, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization. Brad, thanks for being on the show again.
The marriage. Good to be with you, Abby.
Great to have you. Marriage rates are down. So remind us again, what are the benefits of marriage on the couple and on society?
Yeah, Abby, well, the great marriage paradox in our day is that the marriage rates have come down in recent years. Yet what we see in the data, the science, is that the connection between marriage and adult happiness, for instance, and flourishing kids as well, that connection couldn't be stronger. So we see for both women and men, they're almost twice likely to be very happy when they're married. And we see that kids who are being raised in stably married families are way more likely to go to college and much less likely to go to prison or jail, for instance, than their peers who are in, you know, some other kind of non-intact family. So again, the science is kind of telling us that marriage matters, and in some ways matters more than ever, even as it's lost ground in recent decades.
Indeed. Researchers from the Ontario-based think tank Cardis say that declining marriage rates play a role in the drop in fertility rates. And a number of countries, including the U.S., Canada, and nearly all of Western Europe, are beneath the replacement rate necessary to keep a population stable. Brad, are there any solutions to fix this?
I think one of the things that we can do, Abby, is to kind of pursue an effort to end the marriage penalties that are embedded in many of our programs, like Medicaid, for instance. These programs discourage marriage, and that's one kind of impediment facing families. I think another policy objective we need to be focusing on is figuring out ways to make affordable single-family housing, you know, more readily accessible to working middle-class families. And we hope the Trump administration will be pursuing measures like opening up federal land for development that would increase the supply of affordable single-family homes for ordinary families across the U.S. That would help, I think, create a more family-friendly context for young adults to kind of go forward with plans to have kids.
Cardis also found that people are waiting longer to get married and have their first child. In a world that sometimes tells young adults they're not ready to get married and start a family, are there ways to counter that messaging so young people get married and have children earlier?
I think it's important for young adults to realize sometimes they think about being sort of single, footloose, and fancy-free as kind of living their best lives in their 20s. You know, the data tell us that 20-somethings who are married are happier, they're less depressed, they're less likely to be abusing alcohol and drugs. And so there's just no question that 20-somethings who are married are more likely to be flourishing. I think surprisingly, I'll see that 20-somethings who get married kind of in their mid-20s, broadly defined, are also more likely to say that they're happily married later in life. So the idea here is to kind of not to think you need to be 30 before you put a ring on it. It's certainly worth, you know, that idea is worth circulating in our culture today.
Yes. And many countries are offering housing subsidies, baby bonuses, and baby allowances to combat the falling birth rates in their countries. Do you believe this is a helpful solution?
It's part of the answer. It's clear that we have to do more, I think, to make family life affordable and family life more attractive financially for young adults across the country. But it's also the case we need to do more to, I think, kind of tell the true story about the value of both marriage and parenthood, so more young adults want to enter into marriage and want to go ahead and start their families. They're often kind of fed the lie that kind of career is the most important thing. We know empirically that a good marriage is a much better predictor, Abby, of your happiness than a good job. And of course, many Americans don't have great jobs. So I think recognizing that sort of focusing on love and marriage and family is a more kind of important and often viable route for forging a meaningful and happy life, you know, for Americans across the country than kind of prioritizing work, you know, over everything else.
I think you're exactly right, Brad. Now, what are your thoughts on Vice President J.D. Vance's outlook on the family? And do you expect more pro-family policies coming out of this administration?
Yes. Well, Vice President Vance, you know, last week at the March on Life or March for Life kind of articulated his commitment to kind of advancing policies that make family life more affordable for Americans across the country. I think that's a key priority for him. And we're already seeing new efforts with Secretary Duffy, for instance, just recently announcing a policy that's going to be steering transportation dollars towards communities with more marriage and more childbearing. So I think we're going to see a lot of new efforts in this administration, the part of people like Secretary Duffy, to think about how they can kind of basically reform federal policy and regulatory policy in ways that do make it more family friendly. So I do expect some new measures, both from the vice president and from, you know, the president's team more generally in the days and months ahead.
And can you tell us how much does the health department do to support families? And can you weigh in on RFK's hearing?
I don't have a perspective on Robert F. Kennedy. I didn't see the hearing, but HHS has been spending about $150 million every year just on marriage and fatherhood and would be, you know, in support of directing more of that money towards marriage, especially kind of making about $100 million of that amount of money that's being spent every year, kind of focus more directly on helping people prepare for marriage and then also get support in their marriages once they are married as well. But thinking too about PSAs, HHS sponsors, they do a lot of PSAs, you know, on things like football shows and basketball shows, and to kind of use those PSA dollars partly to support the value and importance of things like marriage and parenthood with the broader American population.
Brad Wilcox, thank you so much for your work and for your time.
Thank you, Abby.
Coming up, steps in the right direction. A look at the recent March for Life in Topeka, Kansas, from a bit of a different perspective. Gave you a glimpse of the Kansas State March last week on Pro-Life Weekly. Students at St. John's Catholic School in Beloit, Kansas were on the ground taking part. They also put on their reporter's hat and, working with EWTN's Alan Holdren, filed this report from the March for Life in Topeka, Kansas.
The world tells you one thing, but I think that our young people here say no. That life is precious, that mothers in difficult pregnancies need understanding and help. And I think that just their outward presence here is really inspiring for not only the moms with the preborn babies, but also for all of us.
What's inspiring to you about the March for Life?
How many people are here supporting women and babies. Just the energy, the fact that people care, the fact that we are able to come and pray together, and even, you know, despite not knowing most of these people, I know that we have so many values in common. It's just, it's good to be here.
It's important, especially for young people, to come to the March and Rally, because you all are the future of the pro-life movement. And your energy, your intellect, your voices are going to carry us forward into the future. And so we really need the young people of Kansas to continue to raise their voices, to support, to protect life, life in the womb and the lives of those mothers. All ages are so wanted and welcome, but it just encourages all of us when we see you all stepping up and carrying that torch for the continuation of the pro-life movement, that we're going to be here speaking up for those who can't speak for themselves until that's not needed any longer.
That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.